Jace and Vera Payne.
Despite the popularity of League of Legends, the game does have some issues that need to be addressed, and kind of urgently. Some of these issues are minor, while others are more critical. They all show that Riot Games need to change how it goes about things on even a basic level. Invin Global Esports reporter Nick Geraci joins me to speak about the issues that are plaguing League of Legends and how Riot is reacting to these issues. Thanks for joining me, Nick.
My pleasure. It's always good to be here.
I haven't spoke to you in a while, and between the last time we spoke to now, so a lot of things have changed. One of the things I wanted to talk to you about is Flex Picks, because that has really change the games. But, you know, before we continue, could you explain what exactly is a flex pick?
Absolutely. So a flex pick is a champion in League of Legends who can be played in more than one role. Therefore, you know, like a flexible pick, you know. So, for example, something that can go in both mid or top lane, right? Like an Aurelia or something, that's a flex pick. And the advantage to that is if you're in a team setting, you can pick one of these flex picks without really giving away, you know, which position it's going to. So it makes it harder for your opponents to know what matchup it's like. Oh, that could be going anywhere. It makes it harder to predict exactly what you'll be throwing at them and where it'll be.
Now, I get why flex picking is so important in pro play, because those are the little, like, trump cards you may have. Like you said, you could take Irelia and you would think, oh, that's going top lane, and it's no, they decided to switch to mid lane. And it's very interesting to see that kind of dynamics. Do you think, though, that it has a negative impact in other modes of the game that aren't pro play?
I think there's something to be said for the flexibility creep in League of Legends kind of being a double-edged sword. Flex picks have always been something that exists, but within the past few years, we've had a lot more flex picks. You know, this is due to changes in the game, right? Like, and itemization that have made certain things more. It used to be very much like these champions play these roles, and now it's more of like there's still sort of things that are set as like the standard, but it's also like we have boxes we need to check in terms of like, okay, we need magic damage, we need engage, we need like all these things that a team comp comes from. But the idea of where you can get those, what position those things come from, is a lot more open than it used to be. So it's not just the flexibility of these champions, it's also that the game itself is getting more flexible in general. Simultaneously, a lot of the newer champions are not only strong but also incredibly flexible. Gwen, which was recently released, has already been seen in the three roles. Viego, the Ruin King, who was released previously, that's another three-role champion. I guess the detriment is that roles can sort of lose their core identity. I think for older players, it can be tougher to adapt, but I think objectively, it is a healthier thing. But at some point, allowing for so much innovation can actually sort of, you know, squash it, like counterintuitively.
Absolutely. I will admit, I myself do a lot of solo queues. I don't like to play with other people. You pick up a game, you're just done, right? And one of the problems that I have is that I can't even identify who a troll is anymore because of flex picking. It's like, is this player really trying to take this champion to top lane? I mean, maybe it's a new meta, I don't know. So it's almost like a coin flip whether or not you're going to get a good match because of flex picking.
And that goes two ways, right? Like, on one hand, it very much is like, you do see things that are a lot more unorthodox, maybe. And on one hand, I think that is objectively a good thing, because really, if we're playing Silver Solo Queue or something, there, yes, we're playing League of Legends, but the idea of something being viable is, you know, it's a little looser below, like, you know, Master, Grandmaster tier. Like, more things are viable in different positions. Simultaneously, though, you can get yourself in a position to where just because you see a pro player play something unorthodox or a high-level streamer play something interesting doesn't mean that you should go try it at home right away and queue it up in solo queue, you know, for your first game. So I think my rule of thumb is kind of like, if I see someone picking something weird, oftentimes I try to just give them the benefit of the doubt, because you never know. And like I said, at the end of the day, if you're in low elo, it's not really worth I don't think it's worth getting stressed out about, because you never know, they might be pretty good. But also, I think there are people out there who maybe take that flexibility too far, because they like saw their favorite streamer doing an unranked to diamond stream and playing like AD Kassadin top or something, you know, and maybe that's not a good pick, you know. So I think it's a double-edged sword, but I also think that's ultimately going to be part of the game, especially with flexibility not only increasing but also becoming higher in priority because of how the game's changing.
Now, I wanted to jump into the toxicity, because it kind of goes hand in hand with the flex picks, because for a lot of people, myself included, it's kind of like, is this toxic when you start seeing Teemo in every single position? I mean, it goes to, you start thinking like maybe a player only plays Teemo. No, this player doesn't. This guy, you know, if you check OPGG, they're playing Teemo just to troll. And it's like, ugh, you know, you can't really sit there and try to report this player because Teemo is kind of a flex pick. So it's kind of like this weird slippery slope you're on.
Yeah, I think that's part of the issue too, because it's like you could argue, like some people could argue that Teemo can play both roles and other people can't. And especially at that level, it is all kind of open to interpretation, right? Like there's plenty of people at my ELO or even higher, you know, just like everyday players who do things that are technically at the top level of play incorrect, but you know, they work either because the skill gap between them and the person they're playing against is simply too large for it to matter, or you know, just that, like I said, the game is played so sloppy and so different in a solo queue setting. Pro players have often talked about how even at the high level, solo queue and pro play League of Legends are almost two different games. Everyone's gonna have their own perspectives, but it's kind of silly to be like, what I see is like I try to judge other people's picks when I'm queued up with, because I'm like, well, regardless of what you're playing, we're somewhat in the same skill level. That's why we got match made together, right? And yeah, I'm going to try to give this person the benefit of the doubt. That being said, you can totally tell, like, when someone, you know, isn't, like, I can tell, like, when, it's one thing if someone's like, okay, they're playing, like, a weird off-meta support, let's see if this works. And then there's, like, your Alistar took, you know, Ghost's Cleanse and is taking the Moo Cow skin, and then he's just going into lane and hitting his cowbell, and then just running into tower and dying on purpose. Like, that's not someone doing something unorthodox, it's someone just straight-up feeding, right? So I think there's obviously exceptions to the rule, but in general, different definitions of flexibility are tough, especially when someone, you can be like, oh, that's not going to work, and then it works. Like, well, what are you going to say if that guy just hard carried you on a pick, like, you know, that you thought wasn't good? You're going to say, oh, it's still not good? It's like, no, you just won the game because of it. So I think I don't think anything's entirely absolute, and it only becomes more absolute at the top level of play. And the higher the level you get, like, the more set in stone there are rules. What's a flex pick? What is viable in multiple positions? But you know, with patches, that also, you know, obviously that changes. You know, Syndra is a mid laner through and through, but has been played in the bot lane a lot on the last few patches. And she's gone through other phases like that, too, in the past couple of years, like, but not for a while. And so things change with the patches and how things are balanced. And that's another thing, too. Some people will be like, oh, this is viable, but they actually haven't kept up on the patch notes, or they don't know what the new meta is. So they just see it and they're like, you know, this happened a lot during MSI when Morgana was one of the best junglers. People are like, oh, Morgana jungle, you're trolling. It's like, no, she's the fastest clear speed in the game. This is like one of the best picks right now. So I think it's kind of a case-by-case basis, and it's hard because you are essentially arguing in shades of gray. There's no like absolute ultimate right answer.
That is so true, because when you talked about the Alistar, I thought instantly of the old meta of Int Sion, where Sion would just roll right into the top lane tower, the enemy tower, and just kill himself, and then keep attacking the tower over and over again. And then it was just, you know, inting. And then he would get, you know, the first tower, and it was just a incredibly trollish kind of meta, but it worked. And sometimes you did get carried by that stuff.
Yeah, and that's what I mean, right? It's like, champions like that are such a great example, because, like, always viable anymore, but for a while, I mean, and you still can't do it, it's just a little harder than it used to be, but, like, there was a while that the viable strategy for Sion top, which is a very strong competitive pick at this time, was you purposely die to your jungler's blue buff, because you can kill it in your passive, then you have a blue buff, right? Your jungler goes and gets the opposing blue buff. So then you've basically helped your jungler three buff the opposing jungler just by using your passive. Whereas, like, in any other situation, dying to a jungle camp couldn't possibly be good for your team, right? So that's what I mean. That's what's fun about League of Legends. We have over 150 characters, and, like, there are exceptions to every rule. And when we also get in positions where, like, oh, we've never seen something like that before, usually what's a counter to that is something else we've never seen before. So that's why it's hard to say whether there's absolutes, because there's always opportunity for innovation.
Now, that's just the gameplay, and I know personally I tend to sometimes rage during this game, so I'm not even sure if I can sit there and say that it's toxicity from people raging, because I think that goes hand in hand with any competitive game that you're playing. You're going to get angry if you're not winning. One of the things that does get me kind of like miffed about is the toxicity from the players themselves. A lot of times they'll just start dogging you from the very beginning. And I know one of the newer features that Riot has implemented was that during picks, you can actually report a player if they start, you know, they automatically pick a character, or they're not talking, or you know they're trolling you. Do you think that this is something that Riot needs to do more of? Like, they need to investigate or have some kind of other way to get people to not be toxic?
Obviously, it's a problem, and there's only so much that you can, like, do in those circumstances. I think that the in-queue reporting / muting. Because, yeah, like, there are certain people where, like, in the past, like, oh, wow, this guy did, like, 1,000 reportable things in the chat during the queue, whether it be trolling, taking someone's champion on purpose, you know, just sabotaging the experience in some capacity, you know, racism, or whatever you want to call it. And so it's like, oh, and then he would just, like, leave and dodge the game, right? It's like, well, so he, or, like, you know, he just basically try to troll and, like, make you dodge or something like that. Like, it's better if people are held accountable for their actions, like, all the way throughout the experience, because the League of Legends gaming experience doesn't start, you know, it starts before you hit someone's rip. So I think that's a good thing. I think that there's a limit to how much you truly can control, but I do think that, like, Riot has gotten a lot better over the years. If you have a straight report, like, someone's not going to get reported, like, I think the system's pretty fair nowadays in terms of, like, there's obviously inconsistencies, but oftentimes the only people I see, like, when I get, like, an instant feedback report, like, someone I reported got suspended, it was, like, almost oftentimes, like, actively trolling people. Like, because some people get frustrated, right? Like, we're all playing against someone. It's not fun to get frustrated, but it's like, it's not an excuse to, like, verbally abuse people, right? So it's a fine line. There's a lot of people who are like, oh, you know, I got banned for not doing anything. But if you actually look, it's like, oftentimes they had other games where they were raging or something like that. And I think the system's definitely improved since I, you know, started playing League of Legends in 2013. But I also think there are always be, you know, certain people that you can't really get it. You know, like, there's ways that people can intentionally feed a game and still make it look right. You know what I mean? Like, and you can't really prove that they were, like, you know, maybe they went to a lot of effort to do that, you know, but, you know, if someone's already intentionally doing, they already are kind of sacrificing their own time to make you a bad thing, right? So, again, shades of gray. There's no, like, real absolute, like arbitration of solo QB behavior. But I do think they get it right more often than they get it wrong, more so now than ever.
I do think they got a lot of things right when it comes to people treating you poorly, but you also made a good point that I would like to talk more about is the AFK farming. That's kind of harder to report. I mean, they're doing their job. They're clearing their waves, but they're kind of engaging with team fights, but then they're not engaging with team fights. So it's a little bit harder to sit there and say, hey, this guy was AFK, when you know, like, that's really hard to prove.
Right, and you know it when you see it.
Right.
But it's really hard to, like, then explain it, because you could, you know, like, if a guy, let's say, like, you know for a fact that this guy's been a jerk all game, he's not, you know, they're pushing down our base, and he's in top lane farming minions. Like, one problem with that is he's not AFK. You know, the amount of people are missing. He's farming minions. He's generating gold. He's staying alive while the rest of you are dying. There's no optics that make it look like he's trying to win the game any less than you are.
Right.
Right? And then on top of that, you know, even if there was, and it was like, oh, that was obviously not a good time to split push, then, you know, you can chalk that up to that, oh, that wasn't intentionally that person being a jerk just to lose the game quicker. It's like, oh, they just, you know, they didn't know. They thought it was the right play, and they didn't know their lane timings, because, you know, League of Legends is a complex game. And I would be lying if I said I've made the right call every single time. I've had games where I've lost to a back door because I decided to keep pushing too long, and I've won games where someone decided to do the same to me, right? But, you know, that's the thing, is, like, someone can be like, oh, I just didn't know, or I thought it was the right play, and it's like, you can tell the difference when it happens to you, and you're held hostage like that, but really when you're looking at just the general optics of it, like, without sitting someone down in front of your replay, walking through them, and getting, like, really, really conspiracy theory about it, like, there's no viable way to prove that that person was trolling, unless, of course, you're saying in chat, like, I'm trolling, or if there's, you know, a pattern of behavior where they've, like, they've gone, like, 0-11 in the last 10 games, taking, like, ghost cleanse instead of actual summoner spells, right? So it's really hard to prove isolated incidences of, like, not trying to win.
So true, and I think that's what makes it so interesting in playing these games, and so rage-inducing, is that you can prove it, but can't prove it, so on and so forth. Anyways, another thing I wanted to talk to you about was weapons and the recommendations within it. And I think that's such a cool feature that is new for me, because I stopped playing for a while. And I really like this. But one of the things I notice is that it really takes a cookie cutter type of item set for particular champions. Do you think this was something that Riot kind of did? Like, why would they want to do cookie cutter?
I started playing League of Legends in 2013. And unlike a lot of people, it was actually my first, like, PC game in like a long time. Like I was mostly a console gamer growing up as a teenager. Like the last PC game I played that seriously was like Diablo 2 when I was in middle school, right? So for me, you know, not only not really a PC gamer, but also not someone who played a MOBA, not even someone who played, you know, something MOBA adjacent, like a MMO, like WoW. I never played World of Warcraft or anything like that. So very foreign concept to me, right? Like for the first 2 years of that game, there were still like, and I played like a decent amount those first 2 years. I was in college. I wasn't doing much. For the first 2 years, there were still items that I didn't know what they did or what their names were. And so, well, I think it looks objectively more cookie cutter to those, for us to what we're used to. It's a lot better for the new player. And because of the way the items have been balanced, they've done it for the most part. Again, there are at least three or four items I can pull out of the names of the sky right now that are extremely problematic in their current forms. But the intention is there to where, yes, you do have these things that are a little bit more clear cut, but because of the way that they're streamlined, you're taking less steps to more diverse gameplay. So I think that while there is, like, you know, the double-edged sword of it being potentially a little too cookie cutter, like, oh, I'm just going to, I can't stand when, even my friends, it's like, oh, I just built the recommended items. I'm like, you fool, think for yourself, you know? It is much easier. And also, the thing I really, really like is that they have tooltips on the recommended items to where it's not just that it's recommended, it tells you why, or like, you know, there's three items that build out of Lost Chapter, right? And it's like, you know, Ludens Echo if you want, like, you know, power and wave clear. It's like, oh, Leander Tanglesh if you want max health damage and more CDR. It's like, oh, Everfrost if you want, you know, the icy passive slow and the, you know, and the extra health. Like, it is kind of more cookie cutter and laid out for you, but it's done in ways that I think make sense to where if you're like, this is the style I'm trying to play, this is the goal I'm trying to accomplish, then it's like, what item's best for that? And I think that those questions are so much easier to answer now than they used to be for new and old players alike.
I agree with that. I really do like the changes they did with the recommendation, but it really becomes a point of contention for me only because a lot of people want to be lazy and just go with whatever is in the recommendation. And you're right. A lot of people are like, oh, I'm just going to pick this. And it's like, dude, why did you do that? When nobody here is healing, why would you take this item? You didn't need to take Thornmail. Like, that doesn't make sense. Like, why would you take this item versus that? Like, you need to look at what the team comp, what the enemy team comp is, and what your team comp is. Maybe you need a little bit more health because, you know, you don't have enough tanks on your team. You know, you got all bruisers or something, but you need something to be more engaging so somebody can start the team fights. And I think for a lot of players, recommendation kind of made you lazy. Instead of sitting there and saying, hey, this goes well with this particular team versus, hey, I just want to be able to do the most, you know, damage output.
Yeah, and you can tell the difference to people who are just kind of clicking whatever's at the top of the box and not, because, like this also kind of goes back into the flex pick conversation, right? Like, I had someone, you know, like, okay, for example, Lulu right now is good in multiple roles, primarily support in mid lane, but can be played top lane. We've even seen her in a weird way, kind of as, like, a just more of a support-focused bot lane carry. Like, she's a very flexible champion. If you take Lulu, you know, in a mid lane or even a top lane role, like, you're not just going to pick the support item because it's the recommended thing to support your primary role, right? Like, it doesn't make any sense. So Riot's also gotten good at cleaning that up a little bit. You know, now no matter what champion you're playing, if you take Smite, the system assumes you're the jungler and it gives you jungle recommended items, you know, like for starting items and stuff. But yeah, overall, I think, you know, it gets a balance. I think overall, like, it is a benefit for people to the way these items are structured, but yeah, I mean, people can be, like, you know, a little bit lazy, and you can kind of see it, too. Like, some people are kind of going through the motions of what they think should be bought because they've seen it bought without being, like, really, like, oh, you know, it's like, well, people have been buying Murloc and Nomicon forever. Of course I'm going to buy that on a mage. It's like, yeah, but the ability of that item actually changed a little bit once, you know, this year, and also with, you know, changes to overall stats and how different things interact in the game outside of an item level, like, things do need to be reassessed. So again, I do think it's, you know, it's good for new players. It's objectively a better thing, but it doesn't, you know, like many things, the risk of simplification is that people stop thinking. But I do think ultimately it is the right choice.
Now, this new champion, Akshan, that has come out, I've played for a while, and I have to say that this is one of the, and I thought it was going to be hard, easiest champions to figure out. And I'm not a mid laner. I do top and ADC, sometimes support, never jungle, never mid. And Akshan is absolutely face roll. And I have to hear your opinion. What do you think of this new champion?
It's funny because I really, really was excited for a marksman that was designed for mid lane. Most of the marksmen we see mid lane were like
spot laners who kind of became mid laners as the roles sort of changed what they were looking for. Like, you know, Corki and Lucian, who used to be mostly bot laners, who are now almost exclusively like mid laners, right? Action is like the omega version of like game balance issues at Riot, I think, because he has all these abilities that are really, really cool and they look like fun ideas and stuff. But I think what we're seeing here is that, like, I mean, and again, this could change very, very early, right? I've been around before, but like, abilities that revive teammates, this weird thing where you can like kind of grapple around. Like, he has so many different things. His kit is so overloaded compared to a champion like, say, like Malphite or something like that. Like, his kit is so overloaded that the only way to make somebody this like balanced who has this powerful ability is to just have awful stats. That's what we saw. His win rate was super low, actually, when he first came out. They had to hotfix him because they didn't want him to be so way too powerful. But like, because his abilities are so good, I don't know if there's a way to properly balance the champion. This reminds me kind of something we were talking about earlier last year, where Akali was still in the meta and one of the best champions despite receiving 15 straight nerfs across the past year, but with no buffs in between. That's like, her abilities simply are too good. And to this day, we're seeing Akali in Pro Play because she has so many unique abilities that can't really... You can balance the champion, but like, you can't balance a unique one-of-a-kind ability, like a Shroud that can like make you go invisible, that you can attack from, that you can move with it. Like, you know what I mean? Like, Action has like two or three of those abilities. So I don't know. I mean, I think it's telling that they've already said they've disabled him for like most of the Pro Playoffs and Worlds. Like, we're probably not going to see Action in a competitive game until 2022. And I think that speaks to the fact that like, no one knows what this champion is. And people, like you said, you've had a great experience with it, completely destroyed people. Other people have had a really bad experience with it. Some people think it's really, really strong. Some people think that the kit is good. The stats are just garbage. It's really hard to evaluate. I think it's going to take more time, but it's also going to take more time than average because of this kit is super overtuned. He can revive his teammates. That's you know what I mean? Like, it's not like he's like a healer champion. He's a marksman. He's doing damage. So it's very strange. You know, he's kind of like the apex of balance issues. So like, it's going to be interesting to see how they handle it, because I think it will actually define how they handle kits like this going forward.
Absolutely. I think this is a litmus test for whether or not we can expect broken characters in the future, because this guy is just way too strong and so much fun to play. The heroic swing, I've never felt so like pro player right here.
That's another thing too, is like, when these champions that are hard to quantify, when these abilities are broken, it's like, sometimes, you know, like you said, you've had really, really good experiences with Action, and the fact that his stats aren't actually that good right now hasn't bothered you, because you've probably, what I assume, I haven't played the senior games played, you've probably been able to utilize these incredibly powerful abilities at the right time, to where a little bit of like inferior math isn't really going to matter, right? Like, nerfing Akali's shuriken damage 14 times isn't going to matter when she can go into an invisible cloud of mist, right? Like, it very much is like, that kind of leads to these things where, you know, it's not going to matter if Action doesn't do as much damage, if he can do so many game-changing things with this kit, that it's not going to matter, like reviving people and those kind of things.
Absolutely. And you know what it is? One of the things with Action is that I noticed that he does really well with Armor Pen, Critical Strike, and then you have to spec him correctly. You need that sudden impact. If you don't have sudden impact, you're not going to do much damage. And he's really just about like burst assassination. So you're going to sneak in, you're going to do a couple of your moves, bada bing, bada boom. You hope you kill him. If you don't, you just sneak away. And it's just so lame, because usually you can't do it on the first shot. And once you get the hang of it, it's so easy to go from lane to lane. And it's definitely, I kind of feel like, you know how in some games, some video games, they'll have like that one character that's really kind of low, like, you know, anybody can really feel awesome playing this character. And I feel like Akshan is that guy, where if you're going to introduce someone to this game, you're going to be like, play this guy. You're going to win if you play this guy enough. And if you don't win with him, it also feels like he doesn't really impact the game negatively if he's not really around too much.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's like, because of like the utility he offers, like the revive and stuff, it's like, even if, you know, like a lot of times, like, oh, my squishy damage dealer didn't get ahead, I'm falling behind, it might be hard for me to come back. But he has enough value in his kit outside of that it's not going to hurt him as much, which is, again, it's these type of champions are really, really hard to balance. That's why we've seen Ryze reworked like 6 times since he was created, right? Because mages are usually centered around burst, or they're going to be more of a DPS style mage like Azir. But when someone is just a mana stacking machine gun mage like Ryze, who's like kind of not really fitting into any sort of traditional mage class or any class really for that matter. When you think about it, you're going to have something that's going to cause a lot of balance problems because it's not really playing by the standard rules of the game. And that doesn't mean it's necessarily OP by default, but it does make it harder to balance when it's unorthodox in the way of like how things interact. You know, like Bryze builds mana and that helps him do more damage because of how his cooldowns work. Most champions, to do more damage, they have to build damage. You know, so like that's an oversimplification, of course, but you know that things like that are tough to balance. And Akshon, his kit is chock full of these type of things.
Yeah, and this isn't the first time that a character has been looked down upon. But you know what I think is that it's coming to a point where Riot has been making this game for so long, you would think they would have figured out not to put something this overpowered into the game. And one of the things, like, I wouldn't mind if they did that is if we had more bans. Maybe chalk it up to 10 bans per side or something, more like 7, something, because they have so many characters or so many champions at this point that it kind of feels like I have to automatically ban this character instead of actually trying to figure out, like, oh, who should we ban? It's like, oh, we already got 3 people we have to ban. We have to ban Akali, we got to ban Akshon, and we got to ban Viego before you can even get down to an actual competitive ban.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's something that, like you said, there's a lot more champions than there used to be. And I think, I don't want to say, like, Riot made a mistake by, like, putting Akshon in the game in that way. So I don't think that's fair. I do think that it's, like, I don't think that'd be fair to say from my perspective because of the fact that, you know, this is, like, you know, they've made 150 characters. Like, the way that you try to push, you know, the boundaries of innovation at this point is you are trying to invent new abilities, things that, like, we haven't seen before. I understand that that's kind of, like, how that goes. Yeah, I think, like, when it comes to, like, a, you know, that sort of picture, 5 bans has been the case for a while now, and a lot more champions have come out since then, and like I said, a lot of these champions, because they're, a lot of these newer champion kits, their abilities are, you know, things we haven't seen before, just things that are, like, very different. But now we're seeing a lot of these newer champions be really OP on release, or, like, above average flexibility, or both. It's all very complex kits, very, like, push the boundaries of what can be viable and what is possible in League of Legends, you know, like, and they've been doing this for a while. Like, you remember, you know, when Bard first came out, his portal thing was controversial. We've come a long way since then, but I do think with where we are now in the game and the power creep of things, like, just in the last couple of years, thinking of things that are just going to absolutely bonkers. Elios in his prime, just absolutely absurd. You know, like, even earlier this year, just, like, you know, Gwen came out and immediately was viable, like, one of the best champions in top end jungle, and was just permaban. It's going to happen with these new kits being made, which is why there should be room for them to be made and be experimented with. But then when push comes to shove and you're playing a competitive game or you're in a competitive atmosphere, you're like, I'm trying to win. I don't want to deal with what could be potentially crazy stuff. Yeah, then give someone the opportunity to ban it. I mean, that's basically what we're doing with what the pro scene is doing with Akshon, right? Like, you're not going to be able to play Akshon at Worlds. It's not that he's going to take a ban. It's like he won't exist in the game as far as, you know, pros are concerned at Worlds. So I think the idea of giving the average player more bans than each player, like, you know, if I queue up for a game, me and the other four guys get 2, I don't know. But I do think that more bans is a solution when not only do we have more champions than before, but the rate of those champions being strong or game-changing or potentially game-breaking is a lot higher when the kits are being designed to, like, let's innovate this game in a new way that we haven't before. And that just lends itself to a lot more balance.
Well, Nick, it's always a pleasure to speak to you. And before I let you go, do you have any upcoming articles that you want to preview us on?
I do have a few things coming out ahead of the LCS playoffs. A few features on a couple of players in the LCS who I think have done pretty well, which will feature exclusives from the players themselves as well as their teammates and coaches. But something I'm really excited about with the LCS playoffs starting is, fingers crossed, if the world stays safe. As of right now, we are all set for the LCS summer finals in Newark, New Jersey at the end of the month. And, you know, like I said, if things go off without a hitch with the COVID stuff, that will be my first live event that I'll be covering in a very long time. And I'm definitely looking forward to that. So follow me on Twitter or anywhere. Keep an eye out for that. I'm going to do my best to confirm plans and see what's possible and hopefully get some really, really good coverage there.
This has been the Mason Vera Payne Show. Thanks for listening. Can't wait to hear more? Subscribe, rate, and comment at masonverapayne.com. That's MASONVERAPAYNE. PAINE.com. Also, follow Mason on Facebook and Twitter at Mason Vera Payne. That's all one word. And don't forget to share the show with your friends.